From KUAZ Radio in Tucson, I'm Mark McLemore, and this is Arizona Spotlight. Coming up on today's show, Christopher Conover brings us the latest on the early start that politicians are now taking on the next election cycle. I'll talk to a self-proclaimed mad scientist who's dedicated to bringing fun and exciting experiments to kids of all ages, and we'll hear some of those experiments in action. Luis Carrion will have a report on the use of acupuncture to help with recovery from chemical dependence. And Bill Buckmaster interviews two guests from the Downtown Tucson Partnership about the results of a recent survey on what would make downtown a better place. That's all coming up next here on Arizona Spotlight. The new United States Congress has only been in session for 6 months of the 24-month term. But as Christopher Conover explains, that doesn't mean that big dollars aren't already heading into some campaign war chests.
When first-term member of Congress Gabrielle Giffords released her most recent campaign contributions, even veterans in Washington took notice. She had just under $1 million on hand 18 months before elections. Capitol insiders say that actually puts Giffords in the running to be the top freshman Democrat when it comes to fundraising. And Maria Waig, the executive director of the Arizona Democratic Party, says the totals shouldn't be a surprise.
I mean, the Democrats nationally really are looking at holding all of the seats that we picked up, obviously, 2 years ago, and adding seats to that. So they're doing a really strong job right now of looking at all of the new representatives, members of Congress, and senators, as a matter of fact, and figuring out how to keep them and keep them strong and safe in their seats.
Congresswoman Giffords is getting some outside help with her reelection, even at this early date. The Service Employees International Union recently launched a $400,000 TV ad campaign buy across the country, highlighting achievements of 12 members of Congress, including Gabrielle Giffords.
Last year, we sent Gabrielle Giffords to start cleaning up the mess in Washington. Already, she's been able to raise the minimum wage.
Calls to the union to talk about the ad went unreturned, but in a press release on the union website, officials said they want to highlight what they see as the good work of some members of Congress. Retired Congressman Jim Colby held the Congressional District 8 seat for more than two decades and says with the early start to the 2008 presidential election, it should be no surprise that the congressional races, especially incumbents, are getting an early start.
We've never had a presidential campaign start this early. We've never had one of the congressional campaigns start this early, at least in this district. There is some history of in very close, very tight races where ads are run very early to try to shore up the candidate. This is going to be one of the targeted races in the United States, no question about it. And so the Service Industries Union is trying to build the best case for her now rather than wait till it's in the heat of the battle when ads are flying in all directions, pro, con, and everything. They're trying to do that now.
But the early start to the congressional race does not necessarily please everyone, including Judy White, the chair of the Pima County Republican Party.
I think times have changed. Used to be we seemed to have a break during the holidays, and then we'd start campaigning the next year. But it's not that way anymore. Money has become a big issue, and people start very early.
At this point, Congresswoman Giffords does not have any official opponents. But Judy White says the name Tim B, the current state Senate president, certainly is a strong possibility. However, right now, there's one big limitation on a Tim B run for Congress.
The issue, unfortunately, with Tim B, our president of the Senate, Tim B, is he is seriously thinking about running, but Arizona has a resign to run law, which becomes a problem. So right now, they're looking into that sort of thing. And in the meantime, Gabby Giffords is raising money. And again, that becomes an issue.
On the Democratic side of the political fence, Maria Waig does not see the early campaign start as a real problem.
Elections start for us the day after the last election. And I think that we're seeing a trend in the country universally that elections are starting early and early. So we're really proud to see that the Congresswoman is taking her position and her role as a representative of her district really, really seriously and doing what she needs to do as she did before to make sure she keeps her seat to represent her constituents.
Political observers say that Giffords' strong financial showing and supportive TV ads may be a way to try and scare off any opponent. But the Republican Party's Judy White says she's not concerned.
No, I think good candidates want to run, and they make it work out. You know, either they resign and they run, or they make it work. I think the issue is that when you've been elected to office, such as Tim Bee has been, and then elected to be president of the Senate, obviously people have chosen him to do a job, and he wants to fulfill that pledge that he's made to people. And that's what makes this situation interesting for us.
As a point of comparison, at this time in 2002, 18 months before his last election, Congressman Jim Colby had $278,000 in his campaign war chest. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Christopher Conover.
Although it may feel like the equivalent of seeing Christmas advertisements in August, early bird campaigning is probably here to stay. To keep track of how much money a given candidate has raised so far, the Federal Election Commission provides a financial disclosure database online, and you can find the link at kuaz.org. How to get kids interested in science is something that parents and teachers have struggled with for a long time. One approach that shows good results is letting kids see science in action up close and having them take part in experiments for themselves. Next on Arizona Spotlight, we'll get to hear science in action as our guests demonstrate some different ways it can be used to make noise. Well, joining me now in the studio for something that I hope will be fun and interesting for us all, we've got Caleb Klinkingbeard from the organization Mad Science. Thanks for coming down to the studio.
Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about Mad Science and what the organization does.
Okay. Mad Science was started in Montreal about 15 years ago by a couple of brothers who bought a laser. They thought it was cool enough that they started renting it to go do shows, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and now there are Mad Science locations in 20 countries and in 200 different locations.
And here in town, you occasionally do demonstrations for the TUSD and other organizations?
We've been in just about every school district in one capacity or another, but we also do corporate events and birthday parties, stuff like that.
Okay. And you've actually brought some experiments down today that we hope will have an audio component that people at home will be able to hear. So why don't you talk us through one of them?
All right. Sounds good. The first one we're going to use is going to go ahead and start off with some dry ice. The reason why we're using dry ice is because it's got an amazingly cold temperature that it just maintains. It's actually at negative 109 degrees.
Okay.
And we're going to use a small magnesium strip. Now, magnesium burns really, really hot. And what it's going to do is it's going to actually take that poor, unsuspecting dry ice and make it turn into a gas much more quickly than normally. So let me give this a shot. I'm actually going to get it inside these
okay.
two pieces.
Okay. Caleb is starting to ignite a strip of magnesium now, and the magnesium does burn quite brightly, it's true. So what process actually made the sound that we just heard?
Well, basically, any sound that you ever hear is just something vibrating. And so in this case, the magnesium was burning inside the dry ice, making it sublimate, turn into a gas a lot faster. Well, those two pieces were vibrating on top of each other and just made that noise. Now, this one is called swoosh, whoosh, ah.
Okay.
And we're going to add what we typically call mad science water.
And what makes mad science water different from tap water?
Mad science water is methyl alcohol, which is a outrageously flammable chemical.
Okay.
But in this case, the only reason why we're using it is because we want the vapors. So I'm going to take this 5-gallon bucket. I'm just going to swoosh it around a whole bunch so that the liquid starts to coat the outside.
You put a very small amount in there, like a couple of caps worth, essentially.
Yeah. Barely any. And even what I've added is too much to leave in there. I'm going to dump out the rest in that bucket, and then we're going to use the fumes and demonstrate how kind of a jet engine works.
Once Caleb has swished the mad science water around inside the 5-gallon drum, he's pouring out the excess, leaving only trace amounts of mad science water inside, but we'll find out what that can do. So when you introduced flame to that 5-gallon container, there was just a huge whoosh sound, and I think we lost a lot of the air in the room here.
Yeah.
What exactly just happened, and how does that apply to a jet engine?
Well, the way that that thing actually worked was the vapors were on top, and just that was the only spot that actually had enough oxygen. Well, as it burned its way down, it was using up every last available amount of oxygen in the bucket. There was still plenty of heat. There was still some fuel, but the oxygen was gone. In fact, it used up a lot of it in the room. That was that horrible sucking feeling that we felt that normally isn't felt in like a huge auditorium.
A pressure change.
Yeah, the genuine pressure change. That was impressive.
Jet engines don't have 5-gallon jugs filled with mad science water, so how does this apply in terms to a jet engine?
Which is unfortunate, but no, the way that the fuel was coming out of the back, just the heavy peak and the cone-shaped flame is really what you'd see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll mention at this point, by the way, that Caleb is wearing a t-shirt that says Mad Scientist on it. So truth in advertising here on Arizona Spotlight. All right, we're going to set up for another experiment now, and I believe this one will somehow involve pushing air through these plastic tubes.
Yeah, we call these the flaming didgeridoos. We're going to use air to produce a vibration in a long tube. But of course, we're not going to play it with our mouths. We're going to play it with fire. So we're going to add a little more of our mad science water.
Okay. Let's pour some into the plastic tube, which is closed on one end.
Mm-hmm. And we're just going to swoosh that around again.
Now comes the introduction of flame. Caleb has tubing cut into three different sections. That's about, what, about a 4.5-foot mm-hmm. piece there?
Yeah. And we're just going to use these as different sized didgeridoos to get different tones out of them because they're going to vibrate a little bit differently just because they're all different sizes.
And next, we'll hear the sound made by the largest of the pieces of tubing that Caleb brought down today. This one's probably about 7.5 feet long.
The Big Daddy Didgeridoo.
So we had a lot of fun setting things on fire and finding out what it sounded like in here. You do this for different school groups, so you're constantly putting on performances for children. What kind of special precautions do you take to make sure that they explore science safely?
One of the things that we do is we never let the kids know exactly what it is that we're using for something that could be potentially hazardous to them. We focus a lot on safety messages when we're using anything like dry ice or anything with fire. The kids always leave with a distinct safety message that you don't play with fire or you shouldn't touch dry ice.
What do you think it really takes to get a kid turned on by science now? What makes them interested?
Our culture is so saturated with information that sometimes I think that the kids have almost lost their sense of innocence and their sense of wonder about the world around them. And so it's really important to come to them where they're at and show them just how cool this creation is. And, you know, so they can really enjoy it and say, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. And really get them just to spark their imaginations, to spark their sense of wonder. That's my goal.
What helped to set you on the road to becoming a mad scientist?
Way back in the day when I was in high school, one of my physics teachers had us doing an experiment. His name was Mr. Byram. He was in Flowing Wells High School here in Tucson. And he had us taking a marble and rolling it down a little ramp. And what we had to do is we had to measure how fast exactly the marble was going, measure all the angles, and then put an X on the floor to see where exactly that marble was going to land. And so we did all of our calculations, we did all of our math, we measured everything, and he came over and he says, okay, drop your marble. And so we dropped it, rolled down the ramp, and it landed exactly, like, to the T where we said it was going to land. And at that point, I knew, oh my gosh, this stuff works. And that was a huge spark for me.
What's next for the organization Mad Science?
Oh, we've been expanding. We've been here in Tucson for about 10 years, but I've only taken over for the last year. And so just getting it into more schools, running more programs, getting more kids exposed to it. We've done a lot of things with the local libraries, putting on big shows for them. Those have been a lot of fun. The big shows in the schools are just a great way of getting several hundred kids all at one time really excited about it. Our follow-up studies have shown that they check out more science books out of the library, and their retention and interest in science increases. It's a wonderful thing to see.
Well, thank you very much for coming down and sharing a little mad science with us today, Caleb. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate the chance.
There's a link to Mad Science's website at kuaz.org, where you can find a schedule of their upcoming events and more. Coming up in the second half of Arizona Spotlight, there are many new tools being used to treat addiction these days, but some of them are actually quite ancient. And what were the results of that recent survey on revitalizing downtown. We'll find out next on Arizona Spotlight. Acupuncture detoxification, or AccuDetox for short, is proving to be an effective treatment in helping overcome conditions like addiction. COPE, a behavioral health agency in Tucson, now offers AccuDetox to help relieve the cravings and anxiety that people experience during withdrawals. Next, Luis Carrion visits a local clinic to see how AccuDetox is helping some of those who are on the road to recovery.
For people battling addictions, the consequences can be severe. Many lives are lost or ruined by the insidious nature of addictions, and entire communities can see their well-being negatively affected by drugs or alcohol. COPE, a behavioral health agency funded in part by the Community Partnership of Southern Arizona, provides a variety of services to help individuals overcome chemical dependency.
In COPE, there are multiple opportunities for them, and they can kind of pick programs and opportunities that work for them. They don't have to go somewhere else to get AccuDetox. They don't have to go somewhere else to get medication management or to get support services or counseling. You know, these services are provided within one organization and are coordinated by a staff, so they're not left to try to piece things together for them. It's a coordinated approach, and it removes the barriers that they frequently encounter when trying to do it on their own.
Among the many services offered by COPE, there is one that is gaining in popularity.
We insert the five needles into five locations, which are known as the NADA protocol points, which are specifically for detoxification. Can you tilt your head, please?
There you go. Acupuncture detoxification, or AccuDetox, as it is commonly known, is proving to be an effective treatment for people who want to stop using drugs or alcohol. Richard Bittner, along with 13 other staff trained in AccuDetox, administers the program in clinics throughout Tucson and says that the procedure helps relieve cravings, anxiety, and depression that people often experience when withdrawing from drugs or alcohol.
The five points are known as, are named sympathetic, autonomic, which primarily works on relaxing and calming the client, as well as relief of pain, and also the Shenmen, which is sometimes known as the spirit gate, but also calms and relaxes the clients. And then the remaining three points are the three organs known for elimination or detoxification of the body, which are the kidney, the liver, and the lungs. And then the client just basically sits there and relaxes for about 45 minutes.
In the U.S., there is a newfound acceptance of alternative forms of medicine and an increased understanding of the scientific principles associated with traditional healing techniques. For members of COPE, this has allowed them to benefit from this unique service in their efforts to gain control over their addictions to drugs and alcohol.
Doing these treatments, it forces you to face the things, and some of the things that I've dealt with, They're in there pretty good, but in a calm way, it introduces itself to you as far as a solution and how to go around it, you know, how to deal with it. It helps. It does help me.
I think it is very beneficial to people to try it. It's a nice alternative to things that you can do on your own, where you don't have to interact with other people, and it is a good way of detoxing the body as well as your mind, and it can help you get through your day.
Brad McKinney of COPE points out that this treatment is not intended to stand alone or to replace other methods or therapies, but to serve as an additional tool for the individual in their efforts to stay clean and sober.
We can't make anybody get better. We can't tell them what's best for them. It's from within. And so when they're motivated and they want to make a change in life, we want to be able to provide them with the resources to do it. Programs like this aren't mandated for most folks. It's that they want to get better, they want to get healthier. And if they're willing, they're interested in doing it, we want to provide what resources are available in the community and this organization to help out. So it starts with them.
The path towards recovery for those who choose to follow it can be a difficult one. For individuals receiving AccuDetox, the treatment is proving to be a powerful tool in their efforts to reclaim their health, physically, spiritually, and emotionally.
The relief from cravings, because that there is the undoing for their recovery. If they can't find relief in cravings, the recovery is null and void. So that helps that's the deepest help, the most help it gets from it. The most gratifying part of this is that I'm doing my part in helping people become what they should be, a part of the community, a part of Tucson community alone. To me, I see these people outside of here and I talk to them, whether they're homeless or well off. They're each and every one. I treat them as a friend. I treat them as I normally would anybody, because I could be there. And it makes me feel good. It makes me feel whole that I'm helping these people. I'm helping them to stay away from something that destroyed their lives or came close to it.
For KUAT, I'm Luis Carrion.
You can always find links for further information on all our Arizona Spotlight stories online at KUAZ.org. This week, Tucson residents are reacting to a recent survey about what may be needed to make the Downtown Revitalization Project a success. Next, we'll hear about the results of that survey and get some analysis in a conversation between Bill Buckmaster and his guests from the newly renamed Downtown Tucson Partnership.
The nonprofit Tucson Downtown Alliance is reincorporating as the Downtown Tucson Partnership. It's an expanded group that now includes influential developers, investors, politicians, and community activists. The plan is to merge several downtown organizations and efforts to oversee the redevelopment in the downtown core. With us tonight is Donovan Durbin, the executive director of the Downtown Tucson Partnership, and attorney Larry Hecker, a member of the new board of the Downtown Tucson Partnership. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having us.
So, Mr. Durbin, what's the thinking behind this creation of the Downtown Tucson Partnership?
Well, you know, we've, I think, laid a good foundation over the last several years with the Tucson Downtown Alliance. We know that downtown needs to be clean. It needs to be safe. People need to understand what's happening downtown. We need to let people know what's available to them as consumers and investors. But, you know, downtown needs a lot more than just clean and safe. Those are necessary components, but they're not by themselves sufficient. So the Downtown Alliance really needs to grow, to bring in some partners who can help us take it to the next level, to help us lead the private sector in attracting investment, attracting new businesses, et cetera.
Do you see this as a kind of a big tent then, Mr. Hecker?
Absolutely, Bill. When I, even though I've owned property downtown for almost 30 years.
And your law office has been down there forever.
I'm not that old, but
okay.
it became clear to me during the process of developing TRIO's economic blueprint, which was an effort to come up with a regional plan for economic development. And during the process of preparing that blueprint, it became apparent that downtown is much bigger than downtown. A healthy, vital, energetic, multifunctional downtown is critical to the economic vitality of this community and the preservation of the culture, the heritage, the history that distinguishes Tucson from any other place in Arizona or the Southwest. So it really becomes a much bigger issue. And I think the people in Oro Valley, the people in Rita Ranch, they recognize how important a an urban center is to the health of this community.
We're going to talk a little bit now about the results of a new survey, Mr. Durbin, that was conducted by the Tucson Regional Town Hall and something they call Community Voice. They're out with the results of this survey. They questioned area residents about how they view some of the issues facing downtown. I want to point to one of the survey questions. The participants were asked to fill in the blank for the statement, "I would consider moving to downtown if." Well, more than a third answered better affordable housing options, and one out of five said more retail operations.
Well, I think that's accurate, and it demonstrates that if we're going to get to the next level with downtown, we need to add to the retail offerings. The Rio Nuevo project has set forth a course of adding several new cultural attractions, a new arena, expanding the convention center, getting a convention hotel. All those things are great in terms of more attractions and more reasons for visitors to come to Tucson. But for the day-to-day Tucsonan, I think in addition to those attractions, we want to have more restaurants, more entertainment, more retail. And I think the survey reflects that. And those, coincidentally, are the very things that the private sector needs to take on. You know, the city and the government can build roads and you know, bring the modern streetcar to downtown and all those infrastructure elements, but it's the private sector that brings new business, and I think that's what people are looking for. They're looking for a walkable pedestrian experience where they can do some shopping, dining, you know, fun, play, shop, eat, people watch, all those things.
And Mr. Hecker, one of the other questions dealt, again, retail pops up. People were asked, what's the first thing you'd do if you were in charge of downtown to revitalize downtown? And one-third of the people answered the retail option. One in five said better entertainment. We've been saying on this program for a long time about retail is so important. A Nordstrom's would go a long way, wouldn't it, to help the downtown?
Absolutely. But I think with the renewed energy and the recognition from the entire region how important this is, we're going to see a confluence of activities. We're going to see the housing. We're going to see the entertainment, the activities. And I think with that will come the retail. It will all happen simultaneously as each one begins to build. And I feel confident that with the support we're receiving that we'll get there.
Was it surprising that only 3% said that building an arena would be the first thing that they would list as their top priority?
Well, I think there's some crossover issues here, and you can see that, you know, people want to see more entertainment and more things to do, and certainly an arena will bring that because we'll be able to bring in better concerts for Tucson, minor league professional sports such as hockey or arena football or things like that. So I think, you know, people are ultimately looking for more to do and more reasons to come downtown on a regular basis, and certainly the arena is one element of that mix.
You'll find a link to the Downtown Tucson Partnership's website at KUAZ.org, including schedules of upcoming events, the latest information on the 4th Avenue underpass reconstruction, and more. That's Arizona Spotlight for this week. As always, thank you for listening. Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona, and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. Some of the music heard on today's program, including our theme, was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of our past shows, as well as podcasting of Arizona Spotlight, are available online at KUAZ.org. I'm Mark McLemore.